Welcome back to another episode of Sexy Marriage Radio. And the opposite of last week when we came from the Texas deep freeze, now it's short sleeves.
Yeah, yeah. short sleeves and shorts.
Texas, if you don't like the weather, just wait 36 hours. That seems to be the way it goes. This is Sexy Marriage Radio, where we're trying to have straightforward, honest conversations where everything is out in the open that we'll talk about. Which the reason I'm phrasing it this way is because today's episode is all about the world of covert contracts. Oh. Which, you know, none of us have ever done in life.
Insert sarcasm here.
Yes. Total sarcasm, okay. Because this is a common aspect of what happens in married life, where if I do X, then I'll get Y. It's that exchange-based kind of mentality, but it's not spoken. It's just done. And so to set the stage, we'll talk about it from an email, and let's just jump right in. The email came to feedback@sexymarriageradio.com, by the way. If you want to ask a question for your situation or let us know how this goes, and we'll continue the dialogue that way. But this says, hey, Corey and Pam, longtime listener, and I could use your help. I'm the guy who does the cooking, cleaning, and all the partnership stuff. And honestly, I thought I was doing marriage right. But our sex life is basically non-existent, and I'm starting to realize I've been playing a game I didn't even know I was playing. So here's the deal. Somewhere along the way, I started keeping score, which no one, I mean, guilty. I've done that as well.
Yeah, it's pretty common.
Like if I do enough helpful stuff, shouldn't that lead to more sex? Well, it turns out, no. The answer is pretty much always not tonight, and I'm left feeling frustrated and resentful, which I hate about myself. I want to stop this. I want to retire the imaginary punch card that I've been carrying around so long. So here's what I'm trying to figure out. These are the questions I have for you guys. How do I show up as a good spouse without turning everything into a transaction? What actually creates attraction? Because being nice and useful clearly doesn't cut it. How do I initiate sex in a way that's direct but not pressuring, and then handle rejection without turning into a pouty scorekeeper? So I need help understanding what desire with integrity actually looks like. That's a great way to phrase this. I like that kind of phraseology right there. So how do I want my wife without making it feel like an obligation that she owes me? Thanks. I'm interested in your thoughts. And he signed it, the chief dishwasher in charge.
So, nice.
So here's the plan. In the regular version, I figure let's cover the first two questions in this. We'll talk a little bit about covert contracts, what they are, and then we'll go through the first two questions he's got. And then the extended content today, which is deeper, longer, and no ads, you can subscribe at smr.fm/academy. We'll talk about how do you do this, how do you initiate sex without the pressure and handle rejections well.
Okay.
So when you think of the world of covert contracts, what comes to your mind? Just because I just want to make sure we have some clarity and clarification of the terminology we're using.
A covert contract sounds to me like this is something I'm expecting. This is maybe how the system of our marriage has played out over the years. If I do this for you, you do that for me, but we haven't necessarily spoken it. It's just kind of how it's played out. And is that what
yeah?
It
and
is?
There's a component of relationships that this is just evident in a lot of ways. That I will, if I do certain things, it will afford me some things in return. Some of that is just the way we are as humans, right? Their economies are built on this, right? I work a certain number of hours, I get paid a certain number of hours. The difference is that's likely in a contract of some sort.
Yeah, something written that you both agreed to.
If I add additional effort and I go above and beyond, I maybe get myself a promotion.
Maybe.
And so there's a component of relationship dynamics that has this evident in it just by the nature of us as humans and the way our brains in our society work.
Okay.
So I want to start with a validating and acknowledging he's recognizing some of the different things he's doing, which good on him. He's a good partner because good partners carry weight in a relationship, because somebody's got to do the different aspects of a relationship dynamic and running a household and running a family and running a marriage. Somebody carries more weight than the other and different aspects and different topics
I mean, I think those are two different points. He's carrying the weight. I think the bigger point there is he's asking the questions.
Yes.
To your initial point of what he's emailing for.
Well,
right?
he's trying
to take ownership.
He's seeing that the weight I'm carrying isn't affording me the things I really do wish it would get me. Mm-hmm. Rather than how do I see what I'm doing is part of maybe who I want to be. And I can have something that I'm hoping happens from it. But when I get tied to it, then it becomes a contract. Mm-hmm. When I get where I'm expectant of things from you because of the way I'm conducting myself without being upfront about what I'm hoping for, it's a covert contract. Because we all have this idea, right? I mean, the one thing I think of, I don't know, I just now I'm thinking of this, so this may go off the rails, but the whole world of the contract of nicety that happens and social dynamics that happen of, you know, you host a party and it's a graduation party for our kids, and then we have our kids write thank you notes as a courtesy for what it is that had people show up and give them. And
yeah, I mean, typically you give a gift when you come to a party.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's a positive, edifying aspect of society. But it's still a dynamic that is just kind of an undercurrent of that's the way these relationships go. Well, marriage just takes this tenfold of we have all these different things that I know in the past would have worked if I take you on a date. I have a greater likelihood of it could wind up in some sex happening later during that night. But there are times
cracking
as
up,
you get longer.
Are we equating a thank you card to sex at night?
Well, some of the things in the way he's phrasing this is I would like a thank you and a recognition and a payment of some form for what I'm doing in our marriage.
Okay.
That's kind of the fuel that's setting the stage.
Okay.
Right. And it's clear in this, he's the higher desire partner when it comes to sex. Mm-hmm. So therefore she's the lower desire. And so now it's recognizing, okay, this dynamic is just getting further ingrained between them. And so one of the issues with covert contracts is that it becomes this exchanged based things. But what we really do want is we want to feel desired. And you can't cultivate desire through an exchange rate component, right? Because then it's always this element of, oh, you didn't have to, you know, oh, it's okay. You know, it almost diminishes what I'm getting because I realize, God, I had to work so hard to get that.
Fair.
Right? And so this is where it's insidious for both partners. That's the point I want to try to make just to start.
Okay.
Because it creates a dynamic that's really difficult for both spouses, not just the person leading the charge with the covert contract.
Okay.
But the one thing that's recognizing is what we do in relationships. This is an idea from Esther Perel that she said, she has a quote that says, we often want to feel secure in our relationship, but we also want the freedom to have desire in our relationship. And security and desire don't always fuel each other well.
No. I mean, my definition of security may not necessarily have anything to do with physical or a sexual aspect,
right?
Am I going to have someone to come home to? Are they going to have integrity? Or there's all kinds of different definitions people have for their own security.
And security also is fueled by this idea of I cultivate an environment that feels comfortable and safe and consistent and provided for. And so some of this is where for him specifically, it's recognizing some of what he may be doing. Because I recognize a lot of what he's describing of I'm doing a lot of good things that are quote unquote being a really good spouse. And I would like something in return. That I totally understand this thought process from the way I have been in life at different stages.
Your definition of a really good spouse, right?
Well,
and so each spouse has a different definition
fair,
of that.
Absolutely, but it's like I'm cultivating something that is part of what I see as being a good spouse, but I have something tied attached to it. And yeah. So it's realizing one of the ways you start recognizing and breaking this is you get to the point where you see it as, wait, this is the person I want to be. That I want to be the one that cooks more. I want to be the one that has the providing of different things more. And so let that be. Let that be the desire that leads you of this is who I want to be. And it's less, and then you start untangling it from what do I get in return?
Yeah, well, I mean, if the focus is what you're getting in return, it's like our definition of expectations,
right?
Planned disappointments,
right?
And how often do you actually get in return what you're expecting to get? If it's not in a written contract, like at work, when we're talking about. Here, or I'm selling something and here's my contract. Here's the price I'm going to get for the product I'm giving you.
Right.
But if you've got the word covert in there at all, in these contracts, there's not a real actual agreement of what's to come from this.
Right. Yeah. And this is where it becomes troublesome when we start talking about a marriage context, because obviously covert wreaks all kinds of downfalls and pitfalls and struggles, but so does the word contract.
Well, yeah, I mean,
in marriage,
it's,
right?
Okay,
because it's not.
Yes,
this
I said I would do this
obligation
for that.
Of things that, on a whole, the relationship has some things that are just you're signing on. You're saying I do with some understanding of these are things that are likely that distinguish a relationship that's a marriage from all other relationships. But when I treat it like a contract, man, it's a hierarchy that's really problematic, to say the least. And so the whole point for his first question is, how do I show up as a good spouse without turning everything into a transaction? Is you start just recognizing, to answer this specifically, you start recognizing what are the different things you do that you see I have things tied to it.
Yeah.
And I at least then start to just be more upfront about these are things I'm looking for in my marriage, but going through the route of trying to earn them won't work. Be somebody that is inviting of that and then seeking it. So it's out in the open more.
Yeah, yeah. That's where desire can come from, right?
Right.
As opposed to, yeah.
Because he's not being transparently generous. Is one way to think about it.
Okay.
Versus just being generous.
Wait, what's the difference?
He's not being transparently generous. So he's like, he has stuff tied to it. So be transparent about it. Be upfront about this is who I want to be. I want to be somebody that provides a good environment for my household. I want to be somebody that serves my wife in generous ways. And then be more and more aware of how tied to what I'm hoping for to be reciprocated, what is that? And so I can be more upfront about here's the dynamic I've got going on, that I've cultivated this exchange rate mentality, this transactional process. So I can be more upfront about realizing I'm going to lead towards what it is I'm hoping I could maybe get, but then I've got to be clean about I let go of an expectation I will get it. I will handle whatever happens.
Yeah. So do the good you want to do and 100% separate from that, seek what it is you want.
Right. Right.
Don't seek what it is you want because I'm doing the good that I want to do.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is where it's become so interesting, because if you look at throughout the last couple of decades, if you will, with the different marriage books that have been out there, that there are a lot of them trying to figure out how do I crack the code that cultivates desire while still being a good partner and spouse and provider and all the different things of being a good person. Right?
Okay.
And there's not a code. There's no key to this thing. Because desire is this elusive thing. That's the one of the things I love about Esther Perel's framework, is desire is what exists in the space between us. And if you're constantly hovering and scorekeeping, there's less space between you because things are tied to outcomes. So you're constantly gauging, monitoring, adjusting, manipulating, trying to figure out ways to cultivate something that you're hoping will naturally cultivate. And when it does cultivate, you're always then in the back of your mind wondering, is this just payment for things, or is this actually something they're wanting to be a part of? And it becomes problematic for both of you. And so it's realizing, how do you acknowledge your own growth through the development of yourself, that you lead the charge like you're describing of? You're still seeking what you want in the sexual arena, the desire arena. You're cultivating something you believe that is desirable while still being a good spouse as you see it.
Yeah.
Someone that handles whatever it is. If you're the chief dishwasher in charge, well, okay, then do that in really good ways. Just be that.
Enjoy a clean kitchen.
But that's it. That's the reward in and of itself.
Yeah, exactly.
Is what you've created. Then you start to see, how do I then bring energy into intensifying the other area that I'm wishing it would work out? Because that's his last question, or his second question was, what actually creates attraction? Because being nice and useful clearly isn't cutting it. Well, it's attraction for a marital level on just a base level of a relationship. It creates safety. It creates comfort. It creates a dynamic of friendship. It creates a dynamic of companionship. That's still an attraction.
Yeah, when we're both doing our part, that makes you a desirable spouse.
Right.
In yes, you are someone that is good to be married to.
Right.
Right. Maybe not the sexual desire arena that it sounds like we're trying to get at.
Absolutely, because that's what he's trying to figure out, is how do I now get it to that arena,
mm-hmm,
where it totally energizes my spouse in erotic ways, in arousal ways, mm-hmm, that there's an intrigue there, there's a desire there, there's a something. And that's that gap that is always existent in marriages. Of how do we do that?
Yeah.
And so the best way, when you can start to become the person that this is just who I like being, and you let that be the fuel in and of itself, as far as all the different aspects of the roles he's playing in his marriage, that recognize the ones that those are just who you really want to be, and distinguish those from the ones that you have things tied to it, and either let go the things that you have things tied to, or own them better and just be that, and then start to be somebody that also is creating and cultivating something that is leaning towards the sexual by how you lead yourself there, how you invite there, how you instigate towards that. That's the difference, because there's that whole adage out there called chore play that has been around for decades.
Yeah, you've got episodes on it too.
Right.
Yeah.
That if I do the dishes, boy, that's going to be a turn. And I actually just saw a couple of reels on, or the YouTube shorts on that very thing.
Yeah.
And it's still kind of permeating our society.
It's bunk.
That if I was just a good person that takes care of the laundry, boy, that'll turn her on. And there will be some that absolutely that would. But a majority of the people I've worked with, no, it doesn't.
No, I just expect you to help, right? We're both in this together. That's just an expectation that you're going to help around the house. Right.
And so this is about, how do you do things that are more intentional to create and cultivate a mood, rather than doing things that you hope does that? Because just creating an environment doesn't necessarily translate into a sexual mood.
No, it doesn't.
Right? Because I can have really bad timing I could cultivate the perfect environment at the house that you come home to, that history would show has a good likelihood of creating something in the desirable sexual arena. But the timing was bad because traffic was really bad and the day was really rough and you're stressed and you were talking to somebody on the way home that really got your mind going off of a different direction, and you walk in and just like, well, this looks really nice, and then just go around and start blowing out candles.
Yeah.
because it's like, I'm exhausted. And I could take that as, oh God, nothing I do is right, rather than, wow, my timing was just bad. That just stunk. The world got in the way.
Yeah, 100% out of your control.
Right. And that's where when we do the scorekeeping thing, we don't allow for other variables that aren't at play and in anywhere in my control. So it's actually shift it from giving to get into the world of, I'm just giving because this is who I want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start carrying yourself that way, that's a cleaner pressure of the dynamic between you.
Absolutely. Think of it. If when you're given something, you talk about mapping and things, you know, we map our spouses. We know when they've done something for us just because they're expecting something in return.
Absolutely.
And to the point about desire here, that just squashes desire. If it's right. An expectation that, well, the only reason they're doing this is because they want something. They're not doing it for me.
Right. And so then it can't go. Keep going. Sorry.
But yeah. They're not doing it for me. They're just really ultimately doing it for themselves. So it feels a little bit more like a selfish move for them. So that it can be interpreted that way.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about squashing desire.
Absolutely. And to be clear, I think it's important to clarify that there's a percentages of both going on in all these
sure.
equations
yeah.
of I'm doing some things because it is to my benefit and it is something for me, but it also is to the betterment of a relationship, the betterment of a person. So it's much more nuanced than, well, this is just solely driven by them. Well, not mm-hmm. completely. Mm-hmm. It could be majoritively, yes. And so it's just realizing how do we, because if I get into this idea of it's only just for them and they don't want this for me at all, well, then I get very, very reactionary rather than hold on. Some of the motivation in there is still coming from good places.
Yeah.
It just has been skewed in how it's coming out.
Yeah. I want the connection with you. I'm trying to figure out how we can have this connection.
Right.
And this is a way in the past I figured out we could have this connection.
Right.
So yes, I enjoy it, but I also enjoy the time with you.
Right.
So we do, each side can skew it. We got to open our eyes to what the real story is.
Right. And so then it comes down to how do I start to cultivate this better? It really comes down to a confidence, an integrity, a genuineness that still expresses emotion. And that's where we'll get to in just a second. With the extended content, because this is where it gets interesting, because a lot of times it feels like when I'm talking with couples, and this is a component that we're starting to try to just, let's just unpack this and get this out in the open more, right? Because mm-hmm. that's the one thing, if you want to start squashing and getting rid of covert contracts, just make them out in the open. Just be upfront about it. It's like, wait, I think I was tied to this and that's on me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great move of just like, I'm disappointed because I was hoping if I would have done this, it would have created this, because that's at least putting words to something both of you were reading and was accurate. And that helps
yeah.
diminish some of the tension and then intensify the tension, because now you're facing this gap between us that we all have anyway.
Yeah. Intensify a different tension. Right.
Yeah, because that tension is present between us.
Mm-hmm.
It's in every single couple. You and I have this.
Yeah.
I mean, we could come across on the episodes where it feels like it's like we're in a good, you know, this is not a problem for us. Right.
Yeah, we have the same thing.
Absolutely. It's just one of the things I've learned in this journey with you is how do I just be more open about these things, because they're already there anyway. It's the dynamic we've got. We can't necessarily solve it.
Yeah, we call them out now.
But we can align towards it better.
Yeah.
And so this is that same kind of concept of being able to do that starts to create a more high value spouse. And high value spouses, the way I'm phrasing, thinking this is that draws the other spouse to you a little bit, because they see the wholeness of them, the genuineness of them, the solidness of them, the goodness of them, the generosities of them, the compassions of them. That usually draws people in. And that's how we then can start to try to pivot this to where we're heading in the extended content of, okay, so if I'm doing this in a lot of areas of life, now how do I handle if it still doesn't cultivate what I'm hoping it'll cultivate? So if you want to hear more about that, smr.fm/academy to join us in the academy. As we segue into the extended content, so Pam, let's move on. So we've covered the first two questions that he had. And now let's talk about, so how do you initiate sex in a way that's direct but not pressuring, and then handle rejection without turning back into a pouty scorekeeper? Because a lot of times, if you think about it, my poutiness is defined and instigated by the fact that I didn't get what I wanted.
Sure, sure. Right?
And so some of that is fueled even into, and even more by this idea, but I felt like I've earned it.
Yeah.
Okay. And so...
What have they earned too, though? Sorry.
Oh.
Sorry, I divert.
Let's go there, though.
I divert. Both sides feel like they've earned something.
Yeah, they both are impacted.
Whether either one has actually earned, quote unquote, what they think they've earned is up in the air and for each to figure out.
Right.
But, you know, just because you feel like you've earned something, don't think that your spouse doesn't think the same thing.
Right. Yeah, because there's everybody has areas in our marriages where we can feel like, man, I'm getting a raw deal. I've earned, I should be treated XYZ. I should be getting whatever, 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 and I'm not.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's start with this idea of how do you initiate sex in a way that's direct but not pressuring? First off, the wording of that, impossible.
Yeah, it's always going to create pressure.
Absolutely. And so that's got to be up front in the open of our conversation with this segment, because sex in marriage inherently just has pressure.
Yeah.
Because you said I do. Both of you came into this equation likely understanding sex is going to be a part of this equation. So therefore, the pressure is already there.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's a huge pressure. Maybe it's a small pressure. Maybe it's a good pressure. Maybe it's a bad pressure. I mean, what's the history? What's the background for everybody, right? But it's still going to create a pressure.
Absolutely. And so that means then I need to just be better at how I play my part in that equation of the pressure. Because I can intensify it and weaponize it and scorekeep it and do all the different things, contract it, like that are so easy to do. So the more and more I realize, wait, how am I living a life that is seeking what I want and then handling whatever comes back in return? Whether I get what I'm wanting or it's altered and adjusted some, or I absolutely get nothing, or it comes back in a rough way, I got to handle that.
Well, and I want to clarify I would add a word in there. How am I respectfully handling it? I can handle it in a really terrible way.
Well, and that's part of the equation of the more solid I am, the higher the respect factor is going to go. Because it'll be self-respecting and relationship respecting simultaneously.
Yes.
But it also won't be something that is devoid of emotion or reaction. Because this is where it gets interesting, because we think of this idea of I bring up something that's of leading towards a sexual encounter with you. You give me a not right now, or what about this, or something, which is then different than what I was thinking. And I can have hurt feelings that are going to be instigated from that.
Sure.
And a lot of times what happens is couples get caught in this loop of, well, if I get rejected by something I'm wanting or a suggestion I offer isn't honored, the fact that I have any emotion attached to that hurt becomes the problem, rather than, of course I'm going to have emotion attached to things. And so how is there room for that? Just like there's room for my spouse's ability to be able to say, yeah, I'm not interested in that. or not tonight. Or, I mean, that's what he made a comment in his email was he gets met with a lot of not tonights.
Yeah.
Well, she's okay. She has the freedom to be able to say that.
Yeah. I mean, the follow-up for her would be, is it always not tonight? I mean, do you say, maybe tomorrow morning? Not maybe, but can we do it tomorrow morning? And then you follow through with it, right? You don't want to be the person that constantly is not tonight, not tonight, not tonight. And you're never given the spouse.
Because she's not being upfront in this dynamic with herself either about, she's dangling out though. Well, maybe if conditions are perfect, it will actually happen.
Yeah.
Which I've heard that phrase a bunch from different couples in my office too. Of like the moon and the stars and everything have to align for it to actually be right. Rather than, wait, no, I'm not interested. Or how about a rain check towards this date? Or, yes, but I'd like to do it this way. And that, so we start to see it as it's more of an open negotiation. I don't like that word completely, but it's a clarification of where each of you are.
Yeah.
And then an adjusting.
And, you know, I would hope that people would see that even when the moon and the stars aren't aligned perfectly, that's kind of where some of the more fun stuff comes in, right? When the timing's not perfect.
Okay.
I don't know. There's some spice coming in there, just as a little side note. Okay.
But this is the element of, there has to be room that we need to figure out how to create. And the only way I can create it in my marriage is I own it myself better, which means I instigate something, I lead towards something I'm interested in. It doesn't result in something I was hoping. I'm going to have feelings and reactions associated with that. But what I do with those is what matters.
Mm-hmm.
I can be hurt. I can be disappointed. And if it gets pointed out, well, I don't like disappointing you. It's like, well, that's too bad. That's going to happen. I got to be able to handle my disappointment better. Your job is not to do things to keep me from being disappointed, because that's part of what wreaks the havoc in a relationship system. Whereas like now all of a sudden it's the tyranny of the lowest common denominator all the time of, we just got to make sure I don't disappoint each other. When learning to live with the person that has a full options of feelings that they can experience in life.
Yeah, they got capacity to feel.
And not take those feelings personal is what actually creates and cultivates a deeper connection with each other.
Yeah, I think it takes some to see that. We grow up, you don't want to hurt people's feelings. I don't want to. Most people are adverse to that. They don't want to do something that's going to hurt someone else. Most people, not everyone. Mm-hmm. And so you can see where that's there, but I think being able to then see where in this relationship, this marriage relationship that is so much more than other relationships, you gotta have an understanding that there's gonna be times when maybe you, number one, disappoint each other. Mm-hmm. You got to be real with each other, mm-hmm. with where you are within the relationship. And that's where you're going to create this intimacy to get to know one another even more. You know, we talk about at what point one morning you wake up and you're like, who am I married to?
Right.
You're 5, 6, 7 years into the marriage and who is this that's sleeping in this bed next to me? I don't even know who they are. And that's when the real work really
begins.
That's
when marriage really begins.
That's when marriage really mm-hmm. begins. I think there's a lot of people that just feel like they're alone in that situation, in that if I hurt them, it's going to be devastating and we can never recover from it. Or they'll never recover from it.
Well, and this is the struggle then, babe, is we have this as an undercurrent within us. Some of it is based on just the way society has evolved, as humans have evolved, right? Because we have less things that truly are emergencies and survival driven necessity things we used to have to focus on to provide. We can live comfortable lives, which means a lot of the other things that have been just pushed aside are now more prominent.
Sure.
And so if I have this idea of, I don't want to disappoint somebody. I don't want to hurt somebody's feelings. Well, now then, if that starts to become the primary or a big part of the dynamic in a relationship, it squashes both of us. Because it means I don't have to face what really is being sought after or expected or invited from me.
Yeah.
Because I can keep it all about, well, I just don't want to hurt you. I just didn't want to hurt your feelings. So therefore, I didn't speak my truth.
Yeah.
Because if I really did speak my truth, now that puts front and center the dilemma I have, not just you. Because we make it about each other's feelings all the time and never get anything approached in a good way.
Sure.
And that's what a lot of couples do, particularly when it comes to sex, when we have a gap that both are not inhabiting each side of that they play in this gap solidly.
Yeah.
It becomes everything tied to the gap rather than the gap itself is what we really need to be facing. We really need to acknowledge and address what's my co-creating of this thing.
Yeah.
And some of it is, I don't handle when you disappoint me well, but I need to learn how, because I want to be able to experience what you really think and feel.
Mm-hmm.
Because I also want that. The flip side of this is, I want the good parts of what you think and feel, particularly when it comes to sex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want you to choose to be there. I want you to be there for yourself. I want what you want for that, which is the converse of, yeah, but I don't. If I tell you what I think, it'll hurt your feelings. Well, if I also tell you what I think, it might actually turn you on. And this is the dilemma that each of us has to realize in a relationship. What's being exposed is opportunities to really learn to handle my feelings better and then look at my associated behaviors associated with those feelings. Because if there's one thing couples can get better at, in my opinion, to really shift the dynamic better, is feel my feelings, but acknowledge and be more upfront with my behaviors on confronting myself about the way I actually have behaviors associated with feelings.
Yeah.
Because if I'm angry and I'm hurt and I pout around like a 5-year-old, that creates an environment. If I overreact like a teenager, that creates an environment.
Yeah.
If I'm angry and just let loose, that you're teaching people how to treat you. And that dynamic, which then means they start getting into, but I don't want to hurt. I don't want to make them mad. Sometimes we're tough. You're going to have to.
Well, and I'm not going to get turned on sexually if that's the way this person acts.
Right.
Because they can't handle their feelings.
Right. But it also keeps the person that's in that side of this equation from ever having to face what would turn me on sexually. What does encourage me to actually face that part of my life better? Because I can just keep it about, well, they don't, which is the same thing he does with the she doesn't, yeah. Right? So it's going on both sides.
Yeah.
And that's what needs to at least come out in the open here. Is the high desire partner is not the only person that does covert contracts. Lower desire partner does them too.
If you
would treat me right, then I would.
Mm-hmm.
That's a covert contract.
Yeah.
If I would feel loved, then I will. That's a covert contract. All these kinds of things. It's like, no, at some point you have to face the fact that, what do I want?
Mm-hmm.
Is this an important part of my life? Do I want to be sexual? What does my sex life mean to me?
Mm-hmm.
And so if you can start to see, how do I instigate things and then handling my rejection better is one and the same. Handling rejection helps fuel better initiations. Better initiations helps fuel handling rejection.
Yeah.
Because there's a congruence of, okay, I get it. Because then I can brush off the idea of it was bad timing. The stars just didn't align, and that's not anybody's fault. That just is what happens. Kids were out of control that night, so we just never got around to it, or was too tired, or whatever. Okay. but I can start to then shift it to one of the phrases we've used on our show a lot, which is the long game of this. So the way I conducted myself in that moment didn't culminate in what I was hoping. I initiated something. I was a real good partner in this, right? Not cultivating an environment, but I was really clean. I've been thinking about you all day. Would love to find a way to connect sexually tonight. And it was kind of set the stage. And then it didn't work out because a phone call from mom threw everything sideways, which we both have been familiar with this lately.
Yes.
Or a family thing or a work thing or a kid thing or whatever it was. Okay. But that move right there could have set the stage for 2 days from now.
Yeah, because you handled, or we both handled well, what ended up happening.
Right, because you shift and you just start to realize, wait, I still have my feelings, but I operate in line with a character that I'm trying to create too. And those can exist simultaneously. Yeah. I can be a very, very good high desire partner and still be disappointed.
Yeah.
That is okay. And when you can live that over the long haul, you start to invite better, but you still have to instigate and initiate things, mm-hmm. which means I'm going to open myself up to rejection. Mm-hmm. Okay. But all of life is opening myself up to rejection. If you're not doing something where you could have a possibility of failing, what are you doing?
Exactly. That is way too comfortable.
Absolutely.
No excitement there, no adventure.
And then I sit back and complain because it's like, but there's no spice. Well, yeah.
Get out and do something new.
Because there's nothing out there that's really pushing you to challenge you, to see what you can do. And that doesn't necessarily just rest in the sexual arena. That rests in all of life.
Exactly. That's all of life. Well, and one thing affects another, right? And so those are, in my mind, those are the kind of adventure things that cultivate desire, right? It's getting out and doing something new. It's an adventure that your spouse has maybe on their own or with you potentially. I like seeing my spouse adventuring, trying things new, getting out of comfort zone, because that's just appealing to me.
Yeah, Robert Glover has a phrase of create a great cake of life.
Yeah.
And then let the relationship be the icing on the cake.
Yes.
And that's the exact same framework we're talking about this entire show is how am I living something that has some substance? And then what I'm doing towards the relationship is the icing. It's the frosting. Because if too often we get off balance and we just feed on the frosting, which is not fulfilling at all.
Yeah.
It's a sugar high that we will crash from.
Yeah.
But if I'm doing it from the cake, realize the analogy, we can only go so far with this because it's not going to be lots of protein and self-sustaining stuff in a cake either. But
sure.
If I'm having a great aspect of cultivating a really good life, that puts the balance better and the harmony better of what my sex life and marriage can be. Because mm-hmm. I'm creating something that's inviting. Well, this has been Sexy Marriage Radio. If we left something undone, let us know, 214-702-9565 or feedback@sexymarriageradio.com. So however you took a little bit of time out to spend with us today, thanks, and we'll see you next time.